Yes.
My question is about morality, and you said, because you said the unconditioned is above sort of distinctions of right and wrong. And so how do you reconcile that fact with the fact that we live in a moralistic society, even if it is constructed? And how do you, especially if you are not enlightened, how do you live with the truth of the unconditioned without being aloof to the moral attachments that we collectively have? Does that make sense?
Yes, that's a very common question. As Dhamma teachings of Lungpo Cha, where he talks about people are attached to the idea of practicing good and giving up evil, but that which is beyond good and evil, they don't know anything about. And so he talks about that kind of transcendent realization. In some ways, it's a question of the two levels of truth. Like, so today, conventionally speaking, it's Sunday, right? So it's Sunday, it's January the 26th, and we're quite happy with that convention. We live with that. Tomorrow is Monday, it's the 27th. It's not burdensome or there's no argument about it. But at the same time, when we do the chanting, we recognize the Dhamma is akaliko, is timeless. The ultimate reality is timeless. So we can contemplate timelessness on Sunday the 26th of January. When we were putting together the album for the 40th anniversary for Amravati, it struck me as we were looking for a title for it. I thought, well, it's kind of ironic that it's called The Deathless Realm, but we're celebrating 40 years. 40 years of deathlessness, you know, 40 years of timelessness. Spot the, but not deliberate error. So that's why we called it Time and Timelessness. That's the title of the book, Time and Timelessness, because 40 years of the deathless realm. And so that is very much the flavor of Dhamma and the interaction of Dhamma and Vinaya, because the Buddha's legacy is Dhamma-Vinaya. It's not just Dhamma on its own. It's not just an ultimate reality teaching saying that we ignore the conditioned realm. Not at all. His legacy was Dhamma Vinaya. And the Dhamma side of it is this unconditioned element of the unborn, unoriginated, uncreated, unformed, timeless, unlocated, non-personal qualities. And then the conditioned is that the Vinaya is do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. One of the best ways of understanding the middle way is finding that place of intersection, that place of meeting. In one of T.S. Eliot's poems that Lumpur Tsumeto often quotes from The Dry Salvages in the Four Quartets, men's curiosity searches past and future and clings to that dimension. But to apprehend the point of intersection of the timeless with time is an occupation for the saint. No occupation either, but something given and taken in love, ardor, selflessness, and self-surrender, or something like that. So, attending to the point of intersection of the timeless with time, that's appeared in numerous Lumpur Tsumeto Dhamma teachings, and it's, I think, a very skillful way of expressing that. The practice of Dhamma is in the sphere of these bodies, me here, you there, speaking words, which are constructed, formed, conditioned, in order to help the mind awaken to that which is unconstructed, unformed, non-personal, unlocated, timeless. So it's the point of intersection of the timeless with time. That's the target, if you like, for the practice of Dhamma and its appearance in the human world. So morality, Lumpur Cha, saying, you know, people chase after good and reject evil, but that which is beyond good and evil they don't know anything about. He's trying to explain and encourage an understanding of not just attaching to good and rejecting the bad, which is better than following the bad, but it's still limited in its scope. It's still not the full practice or embodiment of Dhamma. And so that I was talking the other day, Brenda was asking the question about saying, you know, Nibbana is the source of all virtue. The Buddha is a perfect example, I would say. When the mind is completely enlightened, then the result of that is extraordinarily careful, respectful, harmless, and appropriate action and speech. That was the natural result of the Buddha's enlightenment. And that got formalized as the precepts and the Vinaya for the nuns' community, the monks' community, the lay community, over the years, it got sort of spelled out. But the source of it, the root of it, is the enlightened mind. I don't know if you've ever looked at the Vinaya texts. There's six books that make up the Vinaya Pitaka. The last one is a kind of an index, but in the first five, some recensions of it, it begins with the long list of precepts for the monks' community, the nuns' community. Other arrangements of it, or edits of it, has the book called the Mahavagga as the first book, rather than the precepts together. And the first 60 or 70 pages of the Mahavagga is the story of the Buddha's enlightenment. I think it was Venerable Ananda Maitreya, who's an elder Sri Lankan monk who spent his 70th Vassa here in 1986. He had more reigns than the rest of the Sangha here put together. You added us all up, we didn't make 70. Even his attendant was senior to Lumpur Sumato. So anyway, very, very accomplished and knowledgeable scholar, monk, and meditator. He felt that the Mahavagga was very likely to have been established originally as the first book of the Vinaya Pitaka. So the Vinaya, its appearance and its application, is based on the Buddha's enlightenment. And that, so it's right there, the first 60 or 70 pages of the story of the enlightenment and the arrival of the first disciples and up to the establishment of the monastic community. In terms of morality, seeing that the bringing together the conditioned and the unconditioned, the fact of our birth, and that we are born, we have this human life that we're working with, that in the context of that, there is actions and speech that are beneficial, that bring peace, bring ease, bring harmony. There are actions and speech that bring dis-ease and agitation and disharmony. Lumpur Cha, speaking about that which is beyond good and evil, he's saying the fact that certain actions are wholesome, generosity, unselfishness, compassion, if they are grasped and clung to and identified with, they will bring forth dukkha as well. It's not the end of the story. And so the encouragement is to understand those wholesome qualities and the unwholesome ones within the context of Dhamma, to see that these are conditioned forms and any kind of grasping or clinging will cause even wholesome conditions to productive of dukkha. Any comments, thoughts on that, Lumpur?
What came to mind is just the epithet of the Buddha. When we recite the qualities of the Buddha in our daily chanting, one of them is vijja jarana sampanno, perfect in knowledge and conduct. And so it's that balance is always a quality of the awakened mind.